Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Pure Championship podcast. We have been away for a few weeks, but we are back and it's taken on a bit of a different appearance this week. Chris is currently gallivanting around Europe, so I have roped in Pure Football's Dundee United expert, Joseph Hart Winks. For those of you who have checked out the Pure Football website, you should be more than aware of Joe's work. If you haven't already done so, I certainly urge you to do so. Definitely some fantastic stuff there. His most recent article took a look at his beloved Dundee United's attack, and Joe argues why people are wrong to assume that United are just a one-man team of Shanklin. So, as I say, today's podcast is going to be a little bit different to the norm, and we're going to be taking a look at United's season so far and looking towards the future and kind of discussing a few other things in between. So, with that all said and done, how are we getting on today, Joe?
Not too bad. I did wake up with an email from my student accommodation saying there's no hot water and there won't be till this evening, which is a bit annoying. So, but apart from that, I'm doing all right. And obviously United won on Friday, so happy with that as well.
Excellent. So glad to hear it. Let's get underway then. So I think United sitting top of the table, it isn't that much of a surprise to anyone really, given the kind of large investment you made, but what have you made of the season, and have you kind of been expecting this to be the case all along, or did you kind of have some doubts earlier on?
So, I was pretty confident, even despite how poor we were in the Betfred Cup group stages, or we got knocked out in the group stages, that I thought we were going to win the league, mostly just based off what I thought of the quality of the other teams around us, and obviously having players like Shankland and like McMullen and players like that. I didn't expect us to be 21 points ahead in February. That obviously just is a complete surprise to me. It is weird though, because you do need to, as much as I am impressed by how good we've been and how far ahead we are at this stage, you do need to take into account the quality of the teams below us. And like Inverness right now are playing with, as an example, are playing with a centre-back partnership of Kevin McCarthy and Brad McKay. And to be frank, if we were in 21 points ahead of that team, I would want Robbie Nielsen sacked. Teams like A United, Dundee, Arbroath, they've all just, and Inverness, all just taking points off each other. So as much as I am, obviously have to be delighted with how good we've been, I think you need to take into account maybe the not great quality of the league this year.
Yeah, no, that's completely understandable. Personally speaking, I mean, I had absolutely no doubts that you'd go on to absolutely romp the league. Quite like you, I didn't think it'd be by this margin. But as I said, kind of an intro, given all the investment, I think there was only going to be one outcome. And I mean, I think we're only a few weeks away from you actually being officially confirmed as champions.
I will just interrupt you quickly. I mean, you do say the investment thing. Kenny Miller's basic wage was double that of Shankland's. Like, I think as much as we do have a ridiculously high wage budget, I do think that's a bit overblown, because you can spend that really fucking badly, as teams like Park Thistle have shown. So I think it's all just more of a quality thing, and more just we have, where we have invested, we've invested much more wisely than other teams have, even though we have a massively high budget compared to the rest of the teams in the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that makes sense. You mentioned Shankland just there again, and I mean, he's someone that myself and Chris have bigged up a lot this season, and he's a name on everyone's lips. So what have you kind of made of him this season then?
I'm going to make a bit of a bold claim and say he's probably the best player I've seen at United since Andy Robertson. Just purely based on I don't think I've seen a striker of that quality. Like, regardless of what level we're at, he's better than Nadia Achifji. He's better than Johnny Russell. He's better than David Goodwillie, and in his prime at United, he's so far ahead of everybody else. He's the top scorer in all of Scotland right now, and I know he's not playing at the higher quality that likes of Orchard Edward and Alfredo Morelos are, but that's still a very, very good achievement. And obviously, there's links about him being, well, I'll actually before I get to that, I'm gonna, like, it's not just his goals. Like, if you, like, when you watch him play for 90 minutes, like, there's this shite fucking story, like, and it's like a deal on Twitter that he's just a goal scorer, and apart from that, he offers nothing else. It's such bullshit. The stuff that he offers off the ball, the movement he does, the advice he gives to some of the younger players, you can see it on the pitch, what he offers is he's an all-round fantastic player. His movement's incredible. His passing's surprisingly good. He's got a decent amount of pace. Like his pace doesn't get like praised that much, but he's a decently quick player. But obviously he's an amazing striker. To be honest, if he leaves in the summer, I've got no complaints because as far as I'm concerned, his job is more or less done. If he gets us promoted, then he'd be an icon, at least to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely understandable. At time of recording, for those of you who aren't aware, Shankland has 28 goals and 30 appearances across all competitions this season. That is 1.01 goals per 90, which is frankly obscene. Of course, you mentioned that he's not at the top level, but I think anyone scoring more than a goal a game deserves great praise, because at the end of the day, you've still to get it in the back of the net, regardless of who you're up against.
It's also just like the goal he scored against in Venice last week. I know I've just taken the piss out of their shocking centre backs, but by the time the goal was in the back of the net, both the Inverness defenders were on the floor with their legs tied around them. Like he's got everything. He's not just a poacher. And I think like if hypothetically he somehow ends up staying at us next season, I can't see that goal. I can't see that goals to game ratio going down too heavily. I just think he's that good.
I mean, I think given if he's were to go up, there would be a kind of more investment of some more funds available and stuff. So you could argue that better players will be there who could provide better chances, and obviously better chances equals more goals and stuff. And I mean, personally, I don't think there'd be that much of a difference either. I think me and Chris have said for a long, long time that he'd probably manage in the Premiership absolutely no bother. And I mean, you mentioned the summer kind of possibility of him leaving. There's been lots of links, particularly to clubs down south, but how much do you think you could realistically get from if clubs come knocking? Have you kind of got a figure in mind, or what are you kind of thinking?
Scott Burns from the Daily Record was reporting that it was 3 million, which was what clubs would have been offering in January and in the summer. There's teams like Stoke City and I think it was West Brom as well, who may be offering that kind of money. Stoke City and Swansea who offered that kind of money. I would obviously take that. I mean, for one thing, we're about 4 million in debt with all the investment we've made, and we need to get that money out. We need to get that money back in the club in some way. But even then, Tony Ashka like recently said in a podcast with the Courier, which is the Dundee newspaper, he said United wanted to build the team around Lauren Shankland. So, you know, he might not leave, but I can't see him staying for a second season. And if he leaves, like I've said, you can't really complain. I mean, he's gone out of a league that, without sounding too arrogant, Dundee United should not really be in. I mean, neither should most teams in this league, to be honest, but we shouldn't especially. So if he leaves this summer, I've got no complaints. And if it's for 3 million, which is a ridiculous amount of money for a Championship player, you can't really complain, can you?
No, I mean, you definitely can't complain. And I think you mentioned Ashgar's comments in that recent podcast. I think it speaks to the ambitions he kind of has for the club. And even if Shankland isn't going to kind of be there in the long haul, I think you and your fellow United fans, I've got to be really excited about what the future can possibly hold. I mean, 3 million, if that comes in, I mean, that's significant funds that you'd be able to strengthen the team with. And I mean, I'm going to make a bold claim myself here. You could very well do a Hibs or a Hearts and challenge for kind of those European places in your first season back up. As you say, a lot of the teams in that league aren't really up to much. The likes of your Ross Counties, your Hamiltons, your St Johnstons. Like, I think they could quite easily be surpassed by a team with United's kind of funds and what have you. Mm-hmm. Of course, those teams are all in the Premiership and deservedly so. They won promotion, what have you. But, I mean, I think United have certainly got to be looking to do better than them when they go up. I think 3 million probably is about fair for Shankland when you consider kind of the money in today's game. Goal scorers always come with a premium anyway, but when you consider that Shankland is a Scottish Championship player playing for the Scottish national team, I mean, I think that obviously adds a little bit more to it, and obviously that aforementioned goal record that I think that's probably more than fair. And as you say, I think his main job was to get United up, and he's certainly done that. So sticking with rumours then, in January United were heavily linked with my beloved Dunfermline's Kevin Nisbet. and reportedly he's also made a deadline day move for him worth in excess of $500,000. If Shankland is to go, which looks more than likely, would you be happy with Nisbet as a replacement? Have you seen much of him this year?
I've seen bits of him on the TV. I've seen his goals against Dundee on the TV, which obviously I enjoyed. But I think, so firstly, I kind of want to say that Shankland's probably irreplaceable. As of the quality of play, you're not going to get that. Regardless of how good Kevin Nisbet is, and he's, I mean, I don't see much of him, but I'm sure he's fantastic for use. He's not going to be as good as Shankland, at least for us. And I think I do have this fear that whoever replaces him is going to fail, regardless. But I think if we do bring that Nisbet in, it would make sense, because obviously he's played at the same level as Shankland. He's getting a similar goal record, if I'm correct.
Yeah, he's currently got 22-30 at the moment. Of course, we're recording this before the Inverness game for you listeners, so it's currently at a goals per 90 of 0.83, but that figure might kind of fluctuate a little bit between when you listen to it. But as you say, pretty close, and I mean, obviously Shankland's above the one goal mark, but even to get a striker with 0.8 goals per 90, I mean, that's still a pretty good record. And as you say, he probably isn't as good as Shankland. I mean, I think there's certainly some similarities. I think Nisbet's really good off the ball, and quite like Shankland, has the capabilities of kind of turning things from nothing into something. There was those goals earlier on in the season where he was all on his own, skint a few players and put it in, similarly to that Inverness goal that Shankland scored you just spoke about. Do you think $500,000, well, obviously that was the bid that was seemingly rejected, but would that kind of be a fee you'd be looking to pay for another striker, or do you think it's maybe a bit much for someone like Nisbet?
Before I get to that, I've just got to say, I think it's mental that two strikers of this quality are playing in the Championship when teams like St Mirren, and other teams like Hearts early in the season were struggling for goals so badly, and yet they had these two players who, they failed early on in their careers at that level, but they were scoring so regularly last season, and no Premiership team took a chance on them, and these two, Dundee United and Dunfermline, did, and they're doing much better for it than they would have without it. I think it's mental. When it comes to the, I think 500k makes sense. I think we can't, the United fans and the club and everybody in like the staff, whatever, can't say that Lauren Shankland's a £3 million player and get annoyed that a Championship team is asking for what they think is a fair price. I think 500k is a fair price. I mean, I'm sure you probably think it should be more, but I think that's fair for me. I will say, when it comes to replacing Shankland, I do wish we would maybe cast our net out wider than just Scotland. Tony Ashgar has talked about trying to build this international scouting network through his contacts and formerly being an agent, but also just working with other clubs all over the world. Also using like Gordon Forrest, assistant manager's contacts when he was in America and stuff like that. So as much as I do like the idea of signing Kevin Nisbet to replace Shankland, I do also think that if we're trying to build this great scouting network, why don't we use it and try and find like a different type of player that's not really been seen in Scotland before?
I mean, I think that's certainly a different way to look at things. I've noticed in the media lately that you have had a few players on trial. I think Josh Perez is one of them, and I believe there's also an African player currently on the club's books on trial.
I can't mind his name. I think the rumour is they've both been sent home now, and now that we offered a deal. Apparently, with Josh Perez, it was something to do with the visa issues, like immigration issues, but they couldn't get like work permits or whatever, which is why we didn't sign him. I don't know about the Tunisian winger, but yeah, we have had players like coming on loan recently. Obviously, we signed Rakesh Bingham recently, but obviously he's not replacing Shankland. So yeah, I think we're already kind of building for next season already.
So talking of next season, and how many of those players do you think in your current, say, starting 11, even just limiting it to that, do you think that you could say, yep, they're definitely going to start for us next year? Do you think there's going to be lots of turnover, or do you think there is, even saying Shankland stays, would you say maybe as many as four or five more, or do you think it's going to be a lot more kind of turnover?
Right, so when I think about this, we need as much as I love Paul Watson, and I think Paul Watson's been a best centre back, he probably should go, because he probably should go, and so should Mark Reynolds and Mark Connolly. Neither of those three have really shown enough to suggest in any centre back partnership that between those three that they're good enough for the Premiership next season. Watson's been the best, but Watson has also never played in the Premiership, and he's 29. Reynolds is, I think, past at this point, and Connolly is just a fucking idiot. So I think if we do need to bring in new players, at least two centre backs should be a priority. As well as that, a left back either to be backup or compete with Jamie Robson, because we tried to bring in a backup left back this summer. It was Adrian Spoiler, and turns out he's actually a winger. Trying to think who else. Obviously, if Shanklin leaves, we need to bring in a striker. Another, I think maybe one or two more wingers, because we've let go of Cammy Smith. Right now, only wingers are Paul McMullen and technically Louis Aperi, but Louis Aperi plays both winger and striker. So, yeah, two centre backs, a left back, a winger. Maybe a new goalkeeper. Seagrease has kind of been inconsistent sometimes. He can be a bit frustrating. There's definitely something else I'm missing. But yeah, that's all I can think of right now. Yeah, a goalkeeper, two centre backs, a backup left back, and a winger would probably be my main priorities. A lot of United fans, especially some of the more negative ones, the annoyingly negative ones, have suggested signing a whole new team. I think that's nonsense. I can't really see a team being ahead by this much and struggling in the Premiership. I think it more just depends on where we want to be next season. But I also think that we can't sign a whole new team in the summer and expect to be finishing in third, because it's not FIFA. It's not FIFA. It's not Football Manager. That's not how that works in real life.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree there. I think you're probably right in saying they are the positions that you do need to strengthen in. Moving on then, obviously we've spoken in length about Lauren Shankland, but obviously, as you said in your article for the website, he is certainly not the only player to be making an impact for the side. So who are some players that have kind of caught your attention anyway, and some players that you maybe feel don't get enough credit from others?
So I think Nicky Clark is definitely one of them. He was ruled out to the end of the season back in January, but he might be able to make a comeback before the season ends. Nicky Clark, I think because his most famous spell in Scottish football was his time at Rangers, has kind of been written off by a lot of people because he wasn't very good at Rangers at all. He seemed to struggle in Mark Woodward's system. But at United, he has kind of been gone from this typical lower league poacher, you know, not very quick, but smart, decent positioning, can get any good positions too. He's played left wing for us at points and done well. He's played left wing, but not like as a winger, like drifting, cutting inside, bringing fullback out of position. He's also occasionally dropped back, like in the game, the 4-1 win over Park Thistle, he dropped in the centre mid and was getting a midfield balance with Stuart Bannigan, Craig Slater and Rhys Cole, and he was winning. Like, he was playing like he had always played there in his entire life. Like, the improvement I've seen from him from what he was to what he is now is ridiculous, and it really is a shame that improvement got cut short by his injury. Apart from him, Louis Aperi has... I don't think anyone saw Louis Aperi coming. He was always highly rated by the youth team, but a lot of people thought he was going to fail because he didn't have the physicality. Then last January, we sent him out on loan to Body Athletic, and that came with a full pre-season, and he came back to United built like a fucking brick shithouse. And now he has the technical ability to beat players, but also the physical strength to get them off his back if he needs to. He scored against Inverness. He scored against Hibs. I think after Lauren Shankland, he will be our next like £1 million sell. Obviously, I mentioned it before, somebody we should probably let go of. I need to give praise to Paul Watson. Last season, and for most of the last couple of and for most of his career, he's kind of been like a utility man. He's played right back, left back, and centre back for us last season, and the start of this season at points. There was an injury to, I think it was Mark Reynolds. I think it was Mark Reynolds. No, it was Mark Connolly. Mark Connolly got injured, and he had to play alongside Mark Reynolds. And he immediately improved the team. Him and Reynolds at centre back immediately improved our team massively. He's been our best centre back this season, just because this is what attacking players in the championship aren't particularly clever. They will just try and take you on, or trying to cross the ball in, or trying to get send a route one ball over your head. Walter knows how to deal with all that stuff. Just kick it the fuck away. Like, he doesn't need to think about it too complicated. And because of that, he's just been our best centre back, clearly by some distance. And I think everybody who's watching it regularly can see that. And even though I think he should probably be let go, I think he can hold his head high when he does leave, because 2 seasons ago he got released by Falkirk for not being good enough for Paul Hartley's title challenging team. And 2 seasons later, Falkirk are in League One. Paul Hartley is managing in League Two, and Paul Watson's about to win the league. Like, I think he can hold his head high for that. Finally, I think Ian Harkes, and I kind of want to. So Ian Harkes is kind of a bit of a controversial figure among United fans. Some people see him as kind of a bit of a shitebag. Like, he can pick a good pass, can do some good, has some good like technical ability, but he's too afraid to go into challenges. Doesn't do hard tackling like Callum. But like, he's not like Callum Butcher. He doesn't do hard. He maybe doesn't go into hard tackles. Like, you can't really appreciate what he does as easily as can Callum Butcher. Me personally, I think he's the best centre mid in the championship by some distance. His technical ability is ridiculous for this level. I think his passing ability is incredible. He can score a goal from long range, which I think everybody can appreciate. I think like the game against Dundee, the 2-0 win, where him and Callum Butcher just controlled the midfield with ease. Like, he was in the second half, we didn't really have anything to worry about, because we knew that Callum Butcher would just take the boy out. He would pass to Ian Harkes. Ian Harkes would send the ball forward. It's just, with those two combined, it's just been so easy for us at points this season. Just trying to think. Paul McMullen also, I think, is a player that is, again, I can go through ages, to be honest. I'm going to stop here. But I think a lot of players in our team do deserve a lot of praise, apart from Shanklin. I think that kind of sums up that for me personally, Shanklin would be third on my team sheet. It'd be Callum Butcher, Lurie Perry, and then Shankland, because I think Butcher is probably the most important player on our team, to be honest. Not Shankland. I don't think
I'll just interject there. Hey, that's interesting you say that, because me and Chris have both kind of been unsure about Butcher. I mean, I think we've said a few times in the podcast that we don't really think he's a player that you maybe kind of see in your highlight reels, and I think maybe that's why we don't appreciate him perhaps as much as you and your fellow United fans perhaps do. He recently got the Player of the Month award in the Championship, and I mean, me and Chris were both scratching our heads, because I mean, we didn't really see him do much. He's not exactly someone who pops up with many goals nor many assists, but I mean, as you say, he's someone that gets stuck right in and kind of allows Harkes and kind of the other midfielders around him to get on and do their business, knowing that they've got him who's willing to just go through absolutely anything to
I think
kind of stop it.
I think Callum Butcher is the kind of player that only fans of the team can really appreciate. I'm sure this is, like, I think he's maybe like a player in the mode of like Darren McKinnon or Scott Brown. Like, every other team doesn't, maybe not Scott Brown, but more like Darren McKinnon and like players like that, like Darren McKinnon, Jim Goodwin, those kind of players. Like, if you're not a fan of that team, you don't really appreciate what he brings, because you don't see them that regularly and you just think he's a scumbag. But when you're watching the games basically every week, you see how important he is. He allows us to be the attacking team we actually are, because he's the one actually doing most of the defending midfield wise. I mean, Ian Harkes can tackle, he's a smart tackler, but Butcher is the one who actually sets the precedent and sets the tone of we're the best team in the league. We're not gonna be fucked with by how he goes in the tackles, I think, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair enough. Do you think he'll then be someone that'll perhaps be the focal point of the midfield next year in the Premiership, or do you think he might be a position you will maybe change, just kind of try and upgrade him for someone with kind of similar characteristics but maybe just a bit better? Like,
he signed a three-year deal, I think, in December, so I can't see it personally. I think he is also, he's just gone better in this second spell United, and he's looked better than he did in his first spell, and he's looked better now than he did back when he first signed in February last year. So I could see him, I think he's got maybe 2 more seasons in the Premiership in him, and I think he'd be very important for us in those 2 seasons.
So talking of Premiership again, obviously Premiership football is looming for you in a matter of months. So what are your kind of hopes for the club for obviously next season and then the kind of coming seasons? Do you think that, as I suggested earlier, we could see United rise quite quickly back up kind of near the top of the table?
Well, for me personally, I'm just happy to not play. Sorry, Chris. I'm happy to not play fucking Gunnar Morton ever again. For me personally, it's more just getting back at the top level and just being there. Like, I'd personally be delighted if we just finished seventh. Just a nice, boring season, so I didn't have to go through the emotional roller coaster that was the last three seasons of playoff heartbreak, again, ever again. But I think most United fans and Robbie Nielsen, the players, Tony Ashgar, they're all aiming for at least top six next season. That is what most people seem to think the aim is. I think with the investment we have the fifth highest budget in Scotland. We need to be aiming, like, realistically speaking, we really should be aiming at top six and fighting for the European places. Also, because that's the level United, I think, should be at. I think we're the sixth biggest team in Scotland, in my opinion. So top six should be the minimum, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably fair enough. So before getting on to my final question for you, this weekend we'll see our sides face off for the third time this term. Of course, it is no secret that you lot have proved to be a real bogey team for the Pars in our years together. We've beaten you just once, but how are you kind of feeling?
Any win against a Shabalazo team doesn't count. I'm refused to acknowledge that game ever happened.
So how are you feeling ahead of the game then? Do you think it'll be another kind of routine win? I mean, that kind of seems to be the case most of the time you come up against us. And I mean, since bringing in Shankland, obviously he's scored. And obviously Nicky Clark, you've spoken and praised him. Ever since he left us, he always seems to pop up as well. Just as those, every time the Pars fans seem to chant something at him, minutes later he's put the ball in the back of the net.
And he continually gets wired against you in some way and some form. Like, so it's always like some tweet or him celebrating right in front of you. You'll dish it out and then he'll score and then dish it right back to you. Like, there's exactly. A famous what's his name? The YouTube development fan.
Oh, Ben.
Ben, yeah, him.
Like, I mean, fair play to Nicky Clark. I mean, I've criticised him. I wasn't his biggest fan at the Pars, but I mean, I could certainly appreciate his goal scoring ability, but when you consider next to him you had Declan McManus, who was a real workhorse. Like, I like strikers who are constantly pressing, really busy and stuff like that, but for me, Clark certainly in the Pars, whether that was down to Johnston's kind of system, I'm not overly sure, but he didn't really do enough for me. Great goal scoring record. I don't think he was far off a goal every other game, but I felt, and I'm not alone in thinking this, a lot of the Pars fan base at the time did feel he was very lazy, and for large periods of his spell for the club, when he was playing poorly, he seemed undroppable solely because his dad was assistant manager. But I mean, as much as it annoys me that he scores against all the time, I mean, I think it's fantastic how he's kind of turned things around and proven his worth, because as you said earlier on, the Rangers spell maybe didn't go as expected. He obviously broke out, was it Queen of the South, scored goals for fun there, and I mean, it's always good to see a player obviously doing well, even if it is at the expense of your own team. But yeah, so are you thinking he's all going to win this one quite easily then, or?
Well, the good news for you is Nicky Clark, again, like I said, is up injured until at least March or April, so he won't score against you this week. But it's weird looking at our form recently has obviously been not great. We won against Inverness, like I said, but we lost our both. We drew against Alloa and we drew against Greg Morton. So it's hard. So looking at our past form, you'd probably say it'd be a very even game. But Dunfermline, for whatever reason, this isn't very statistical, but the film, for whatever, just keep shitting it against us, regardless of who our manager is, and regardless of how bad Luke Bally we've been playing, we do tend to get a some kind of result against you. So for that reason, I'm probably going to say we should win at about 2-0. Hopefully, Pauliff has been fired into the sun and never plays for us again. But if he does start, it probably will be a draw, to be honest.
So why do you think if Pauliff plays, it'll end up a draw then, just out of curiosity?
not for lack of a better word, I think he's shite. He offers nothing that Paul McMullen and Louis Apere don't offer. Let me rephrase that. Paul McMullen and Louis Apere offer 10 times more than he does. He plays like he's unfit. He constantly makes the wrong decisions. He is injured all the time. And when he's out injured and Leo Nielsen has to play other people, we play so much better because we don't have to wedge in Paul. I don't get what he offers. I don't get why we signed him in the first place. I'll be stunned if he's still here when we're in the Premiership. And it's really, really fucking irritating how much protection he gets from Nielsen. Because like I said, the moment Paulette's back training full-time, he is in the first team, or at least in the first team. It's so, so irritating. He is just not good enough.
I think you could probably say that for a lot of players at teams. Paulette is, of course, Dundee United's example. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't really think of any at the Pars at the moment who are kind of like that. I mean, I think the goalie situation was handled a bit poorly, but other than that, I mean, I've completely forgot what I was going to say. I'll just scrap my bit. That was shite. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point you've made there. As for my thoughts ahead of the game, I'd like to hope we could maybe take advantage of your kind of sleepwalking form as of late. Me and Chris have spoken about it quite a bit recently, and I mean, I've certainly noticed anyway, it seems like you underestimate both Arbroath and Alloa each time you play them due to their part-time status. Of course, you just mentioned the recent results there, and I'd like to hope that although the Pars aren't part-time, you may underestimate us on the basis that you always just turn up and beat us regardless of how we play. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I just need to wait and see. I don't think our season is going to be defined, and, I mean, it never was going to be defined by the matches against you lot. It was also the teams kind of round about us, which, as you've said, we're all pretty much similar in terms of ability and consistency and everything like that. So, yeah, just going to need to wait and see. Fingers crossed for a Pars win, but...
Who is your game in hand against?
We have a game in hand against Partick.
Oh, it's tonight. Is that another game tonight?
Yeah, we've got the game against Inverness tonight.
Oh, okay.
We've got one against Partick Thistle as well. So, Inverness, obviously, second in the table at the moment. They'll be looking to bounce back from getting beat by you. And, I mean, with the promotion playoff kind of race so tight, they're going to want to try and push away, but... We, before the 3 weeks without a game, had 1-2 on the bounce, kind of snapped that really poor run of form. So I think it's certainly going to be an interesting game, but we just have to kind of wait and see. So on the topic of the promotion playoffs, I'm going to finish by asking you perhaps an impossible question. Not Dundee United related, but who do you think will finish in the Championship promotion playoffs?
Yeah, hopefully not Dundee United related. Barring some kind of amazing... bottle job by us. I think Inverness and United are obviously going to be there. Regardless of what I've said about Inverness's stupid decision to sell both their centre-backs in January, John Robinson's a very good manager. He'll find a way to make that work. And they've got good attacking players and a decent midfield. I think they'll be there. And United are the same. Mark Kerr seems to have turned it around a bit after struggling. He struggled for a wee bit when he first got the job. He's turned it around. They're now back around where they should be. I think they'll be in the playoffs as well. For fourth, when I was looking at the table and I was looking at this, I decided to be a little bit wide and say it's going to be either Hughes or Arbroath and not Dundee. And that's not just me being a dickhead. It's more just I genuinely look at Arbroath and Dunfermline's teams and I'm more impressed by what they have to offer than I do Dundee's. And I don't know how much of that is just bias. I'm sure you can call me out and say it might just be bias, but that's generally how I feel. I'm more impressed by the likes of Kevin Nisbet and Ryan Dow than I am by Kane Hemmings and Ollie Crankshaw. Is that his name?
Yeah, I mean, he's not exactly set the world alight since he came in, but I mean, I think even with my Pars tinted specs off, I mean, I think anyone could see that the Pars maybe edge it a bit. Hemmings is, of course, a player that everyone knows how good he is, but and obviously they've got Dons as well, but I'd like to think that on their day, the Pars probably could edge it against Dundee. Of course, we beat them earlier on in the season, just a few weeks back, actually. Mm-hmm. But Arbroath's another one. I mean, I think it'd be an absolutely fantastic story if Dick Campbell managed to somehow steer them into the playoffs. I mean, I don't know what you can even say. I'm sitting here stuttering because I genuinely can't think of the words to describe what Dick Campbell has managed to do with this team. I mean, I think most people were tipping Arbroath to go right back down. There was a lot of criticism regarding the lack of kind of investment and movement, but for whatever reason, Dick Campbell's got these players kind of all singing from the same hymn sheet, and I guess you could kind of argue it's a bit similar to Livingston a few seasons ago. They weren't exactly favourites for anything. They just quietly went about their business, and I mean, if Arbroath somehow managed to repeat that feat, we could be, and I'm not exaggerating here, looking at one of the greatest Scottish footballing stories. I mean, it would be remarkable.
It would absolutely be one of the great, like, just me personally, like, Angus is where I'm from, and the fact that an Angus team is doing this well is just stupid. Like, I refuse to accept it's happening. Like, even like when they beat us a few weeks ago when it was Craig White and the raw fucking people scoring the winner, I wasn't even that bothered. Like, at this point, it's just like, you want Arbroath finishing the playoffs just because the story itself is hilarious, especially if it's at the expense of Dundee. That I would find that very, very funny. But I do genuinely think they're in with a chance. A lot of people do seem to just be writing them off, that they assume that in the next 12 games they're kind of regressed to what people think the mean is for them, which is probably like 8th or 7th. But I actually think where they are right now is where they deserve to be, because I think the quality of their team is understated. They have the best part-time team in Scotland. Just look at their players and look at what those players are known for. That team, I would take Thomas O'Brien at United, to be honest. The players at that team right now who I would take for the Premiership. Like, it doesn't surprise me that much that of where they are right now, to be honest.
No, not at all. I mean, I think O'Brien's someone that I think they might be fielding calls for. Obviously, I'm not sure on his work situation. It might take a significant offer for him to even consider ditching Arbroath. But another player who has mightily impressed me this year has been Mikko Virtanen. Of course, he's only on loan at Arbroath from Aberdeen. But the fact that they're able to kind of get players of Virtanen's quality in, and obviously we can't mention Arbroath without bringing up Bobby Lynn. Bobby Lynn, I think, recently turned 34 years old, but, I mean, you would not believe it. Lynn is the talisman of this Arbroath team and just seems to be capable of doing so, so much. And, I mean, it's a real shame that he's maybe not a few years younger, because he could have really, really helped Arbroath if they'd only managed to have gotten this in the Championship a few years earlier. But moving on then, the final question concerns the relegation kind of spots. Who do you think are going to finish bottom, and who do you think is going to occupy that relegation playoff spot?
So, once again, I've kind of gone for a more controversial take than most. I've said that Alloa will probably stay up. I just think that of all the teams in the bottom four, which is Thistle, Queen of the South, Alloa Athletic and Cunic Morton, I think Alloa are probably the least shambolic. They seem to have the most dig in them, the ones who most made, like, willing to fight it out. Like, even this last weekend where they were 4-2 down, I managed to draw back to four all. Like, I think they'll stay up. I think Morton will also stay up, because this is going to sound really bad, I think Greening Morton are maybe boring enough that they don't really need to be too concerned. And with Queen of the South and Park Thistle, who I do think will probably be the teams going down, or at least in the relegation spots, they seem a shambles all over the place. Especially Park Thistle. I don't think they're going down, as far as I'm concerned. I don't really care how much they spent in January. The names, the players they have, I might know who they are, but I know who they are for not being very good at football. Like, I'm going to get the team up just so I can remember, but I do think Park Thistle would definitely be the team finishing 10th, in my opinion. I can't really see them staying up.
So do you think it'll be Queen of the South finishing 9th then, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's just, I think Greening Morton have just enough to stay up. I think it'll be close going to the end of it, but I think it'll be Greening Morton will finish 8th, and then Queen of the South will have to deal with promotion relegation playoff again. I think they actually might go down this season, because Stephen Dobie hasn't been up to the races this season, has he?
No, I mean, me and Chris have spoken about this several times. Of course, Dobby's goals last season, I think it could have been calculated that if it wasn't for him, they'd have been well down. This season, he's not really had as much. I think he was injured at the start, took him a wee while to get going. And meanwhile, he's kind of popped up with goals and assists still. It's certainly not at the rate that we've seen from him in recent years. And I mean, I think when last close season came about, Queen of the South's team was gutted. They lost several players. And I mean, personally, I don't think they recruited all that well. Of course, they did have a few good players. They got Robbie McCrory in on loan from Rangers. Obviously, lost him in January. And if I'm not wrong, they've not won a game since he's left. So
I mean, that's also the thing. Like, they lost Robbie McCrory to Livingston. They also lost Darren Brownlee to Paddy Thistle. And even though I think that's going to be bad for both teams, because I think Thistle are kind of down regardless of who they bring in. But that's also maybe fucked over Queen of the South, because he was clearly their best centre-back. Just even looking at their squad right now, the idea of Lee Kilday and some no-name called Michael Ledger being their centre-backs does give me the fear for Queen of the South fans, to be honest. Like, it is, they do seem a bit... Both teams just seem doomed now, to be honest, as bad as that sounds.
No, I mean, I think yeah, fair enough to say that. As you say, both teams, quite simply, haven't been good enough for some time, but such as the Championship, in a few weeks' time, we could somehow be looking at the pair of them in the promotion playoffs. Just given how crazy this league is, a few wins and they're right up there. But I mean, personally, I don't think even the most optimistic people in the world could see either of them up in the playoffs. But I mean, stranger things have certainly happened. With that is the end of my questions for you, Joe. So thank you very much for coming on. Just for people who don't know where you're at and stuff, where can people follow you on Twitter and what have you?
I'm on Twitter as @jhurstwinks, no hyphen in the Twitter name. Obviously, my writing is mainly on Pure Football. I also have another Twitter account called Tannadice Times, which I very rarely tweet on, but if I do tweet on that, it's basically just Dundee United related stuff. Also, I have my own personal blog, which is just... It's a WordPress blog. It's in the link of my Twitter account. So if you're interested in non-football stuff and some Dundee United stuff that's a bit too fan orientated to be on the web on Pure Football, you can find it there as well.
Excellent. So thank you for listening, everyone. We will be back next week. I have another special guest lined up, so I'll keep you in suspense until then. So thanks to Joe.